Hey Enneagram friends, I'm Abby, an IEA accredited Enneagram coach and certified somatic experiencing practitioner. In today's episode, I share the coaching space with an Enneagram 3 that desires some reprieve from the burden of expectations that his type 3 structure is creating for him. We explore the hustle and the desire to accomplish that's so intrinsic in the type 3 structure and how we can balance out some of the anxiety and shame around those expectations by slowing down and having some space to check in with yourself. In our conversation, there's also a gentle invitation to be kind to himself when he notices the type 3 structure emerging, which is really a good reminder for all of us as we become more aware of our blind spots. The Enneagram 3 in this coaching space is a friend and a former coworker, so it was really a gift to get to share the coaching space with him. Okay, friends, I hope you'll listen in with curiosity and compassion and see what resonates in your experience.
Oh my goodness, I love it. Yeah. Oh man.
Well, as we come into this coaching space and kind of transition into that, sure. I'm curious what you have thought of, what you have on your mind, what you want to focus our time on as we kind of come into this coaching space together.
Honestly, one, just honored that you thought of me because as a three, it's always a journey. And I mean, for everyone it is, but definitely really looking to just, I think, continually process and think about what does it look like to live in a healthy way. And also still feeling, the right word is like still feeling worthy, I think is probably, the journey. And honestly, you know, it's such a beautiful thing that I'm talking to you in this space versus where I was a year ago, work-wise, because so much of that has been in the state of healing right now and been healing and been kind of working through how much of it is a employer's impact versus it's in me just taking that and projecting it onto myself and saying that, oh no, I'm going to use my employer as the excuse for why I'm pushing and pushing and pushing. And so it's really honestly timely because I've just been thinking more and more about what does it mean to balance and to calibrate and to push for the right reasons, but not push to the level that's just constant unhealthiness. I don't know. That's very all over the place. But.
Yeah. I'm curious as you kind of talk through some of this, it sounds like almost a reflection, you know, of where I was a year ago, now having been in this job for a while and it being a really balanced and healthy, I'm sure it has its ups and downs, but sure. being a good space. But I'm curious as you talk through that reflection, what is it about that? Do you feel like you are still working towards or still need to arrive in versus what feels like, yeah, this is good?
I think being content with leaving at 5, getting in at a normal time and knowing that that's enough for me, because I think I have a bar that has been set for me work-wise, but then there's a bar that no one has ever set for me that I've set for myself that is happening in both personal and professional and spiritual worlds. Mm-hmm. And it feels like to me right now, the biggest hurdle is me, the biggest obstacle is me in setting different habits and setting different things in place that are going to kind of almost like in like a bowling, like bumpers to keep me on the lane of what is actually what's needed, what's good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I was having lunch with a guy, a fellow three, and I feel like he's very successful. He works here at Ramsey. He's just a great guy. And he just spent the whole time talking about slowing down. You've just got to slow down. And that word, that phrase is terrifying. Like, I don't know what that means. And also like, it's also fun to be successful and it's also fun to keep pushing. But when does it like, how how much do I keep doing that? Like, I don't know. There's a lot of meandering there, but yeah.
So, I'm curious, even as you talk about this first piece of it, of, the expectations, and there's a certain expectation of what I'm, what is on my job description, and then there's my additional expectations at work, and then obviously all these expectations outside of that, and personal and spiritual. But as you were just now talking through that, I'm curious what sense you get of that. Sometimes that feels really inspiring to people of like, yes, and this is what I'm trying to do, and I feel really good about this, and I'm passionate, and I'm hopeful. But sometimes there's this sense of like anxiety of like, I have to keep running because all these things are happening. And I'm just curious how that lands in your experience.
From a feeling standpoint, as I'm saying that, I don't feel awesome about it because I have been told since undergrad, David, you slow down or you can stop. And it just, I've changed the work settings, I've changed the work, but I don't feel like I've changed. And I don't know if I'm completely bought into the concept of slowing down because it's almost like like a superhero movie. Like I know your husband would appreciate that, but like there's the power of it that like gets you places, but then there's the curse of the having that burden of unhealthiness. And that I know sounds really cocky, like a superhero, but it's just I think there's an element of being content with slowing down is just as much of the battle as actually slowing down.
Well, and I think, when you say superhero, like, we talk about the idea that, and I think my husband coined it of like superpower of your Enneagram type,
Yes,
which is, very Enneagram 7 of him. But I think, that shouldn't be pushed to the side because there is this aspect of your type, that is a gift, right? It is really helpful that you have a propensity towards, activating and achieving things and moving things forward and helping people get from point A to point B and, having some agency in life, right? Not just letting life happen to you, but actually having some agency there, right? Those are real gifts that some types just truly struggle with, right? Those are the things that they wish were common sense and easy for them, and they're not. They're working on some of those pieces. But there's always the curse of it too, right? There's like this blessing and curse of
for
when
sure.
that becomes the default, when you have to be that, when you have to show up, you have to do those things. Otherwise, there becomes this anxiety of if I slow down, then it's almost like our type is, there's too much of it. You're overcompensating with your type structure. And there's other things that you can bring into the mix, right? Having some balance of being and listening and contemplating and resting and playing, those are all these pieces that a really good balance to that, to help hold it, in its place so that you're not always leading with doing and accomplishing.
Yes. Yeah, I mean it's I think it's trying to find the balance of appreciating what the Lord has given me, but at the same time not sitting in that to the point where I am my own God. Like I'm and I think we're just so fortunate in this society where we just have so much control over things that I think I've almost felt like I'm due up for like something breaking down, whether it's a car or it's the house we just bought, or I don't know, like not being able to have kids one day, something that's going to push me to realize the thing in which I know here, but I don't in my head, but I don't know, or I'm not believing in my heart.
But I think even the awareness that you have of this is a piece that I'm paying attention to. I haven't arrived in this. I don't know exactly what this looks like. I haven't fully accepted this as a gift. The fact that you even have it on the radar, I think you are way ahead of the game because for some threes, it takes this monumental, I just collided into the wall, and it's this devastating breakup. It's this devastating loss of an income or job. It's this devastating loss of an identity. And then it becomes this moment of realizing, oh, all along I was pushing too much and I had way too high of expectations and I wasn't allowing myself to just be present and enjoy things. I was constantly going to the next. And so even if you haven't fully arrived in it, I think the fact that you have it on your radar and you're curious about it, you're trying to pay attention to, you know, what would it actually look like to incorporate rest and slowness and be cognizant of the expectations I have and be curious about, you know, is that a realistic expectation? Why do I have this expectation?
And a lot of that journey began when, you know, when you and I were working together and then shifting to working at this, you know, other institution and moving up on the chain, if you will. And the whole time the thought was just keep moving up, just this is the next step in the process, and believing that that was what was defining success and that was what you were supposed to do, and then realizing that I did not have the complete power to set those boundaries. I did not have the complete power to walk away, but there were also other things when like we go to those stages of being healthy that I needed that weren't existent in that previous role, and also where we lived in our community. And so moving back to Nashville was kind of like this decision of not just leaving that career field, but also leaving that space where there were some things that are really, really healthy, like being in the mountains and hiking and being outdoors and accomplishing that. But there was an element of community that was missing. And through that journey and those conversations, I just met with a ton of people, like did informational interviews and sat down with people. I started to realize that the work I was doing and the career I was in was someone had told me that I trusted and believed in when I was a student, this is the job you could do.
Yeah.
But I heard it as this is the job you should do because that there was someone that I wanted to impress and I wanted to appreciate. And so then it became, this is my identity. This is my career. I'm fully bought in. I'll go get a master's. I'll go follow the kind of the chain. And then kind of realizing that that's not actually, like, you're not required to do that. You haven't failed. You haven't hurt someone. You haven't disappointed anyone. You haven't lied to anyone if you got a master's in something, but you change your career and right. pivot to something else.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I appreciate even just your reflection on that experience. You know, one of the things that I feel like often comes up when I'm interacting with threes in coaching spaces is just this idea of just because you're good at it doesn't mean you should do it. And I think sometimes that feels hard of like, why not? Like, why wouldn't I go do something that I'm good at? Or why wouldn't I
be excellent?
Yes. Right. Or why wouldn't I accomplish something that I have the capacity to finish or complete, especially if it's needed by others, right? Like this is, you know, I could take the lead on this project. I could lead this committee. I could whatever this big idea. But letting it be almost this red flag for you of just because I can do this or because I would be good at this does not mean that I should do this. Doesn't mean you never do anything, right? But letting that be a moment of discernment of, okay, me being good at this doesn't, that's not the catch all, like, yes, I should go do this. It's a, how does this impact my values, right? The people I care about, how will that impact them? The things I care about, my hobbies and my things that I do that are restful or playful, the communities that I'm a part of, whether that's your worshiping community or your neighborhood, right? How does this decision impact all of those things? And slowing yourself down enough to discern that, even just that, the slowing yourself, the having a little bit of pause that's built in, kind of, you know, that those bumper lanes that you were talking about, having a little bit of pause built into these big decisions that are made, or even small things like, you know, you're in a meeting and they say, who's going to take this before you raise your hand instantly, because you know, you're good at it and you could do it, but just having a little bit of pause there too.
Yeah, it's really actually so interesting that you said that, because I went from a role in of leadership, and now I'm in much more of a producer role where I'm a part of a team of about 16, 17 people that have the same position as me. And we all have, you know, 300 to 400 clients that we're supporting and managing. But it's interesting because there have been a couple of times where I have wanted to push and do more because I've seen the opportunities to do more. And when they're not collaborative based. The danger is that if I ever leave my role and someone else takes on these clients I'm working with, the bar that I set was not helpful for the larger whole of the organization. And it's been really interesting because I'm like, I want to push, but the key phrase that I've kept realizing is it's an I, not a we. And if we don't push together from a collaborative standpoint in serving our clients consistently well, and I'm here, I'm higher above that because I have pushed for my own desire for them to like me and to see me as the kind of reason that they have been successful in the program and I've retained this amount of clients, that I is detrimental to the larger whole. And that's been really conflicting because it's helped me realize that in previous roles, I had the space to be individualized in my, like, this view of the success I experience is up to me, the failure experience is because of me. And so therefore, I have, as you kind of said earlier in the conversation, like, it's up to me to kind of contribute and make this work. But because I was in those spaces where I could be more siloed, it was allowed to happen more often, and I didn't have those bumpers in the lane to kind of go, well, David, this is not actually helpful. This is going to be hurtful for the team because we're going way too far above what is realistic for the rest of the group.
Have you become aware of that through trial and error, or is it something that you kind of picked up pretty quickly?
It's been a both and. So there's been a couple initiatives that I have kind of spearheaded. And the first time we did it, I was kind of the, I had taken on internally, not explicitly, but internally, I'd taken on the weight of it because I had been the one to craft the idea and kind of put a lot of the work into it. But there were people involved in it that wanted to help. And I wasn't really trusting of them that they would actually want to help and that they could deliver on what I had in my head of this vision, this image, this idea. And then selfishly, I wanted to be the reason that it went well. And so when things started not happening great, there were a couple misses and challenges, it still went well, the initiative that we did. I was a mess. Like I was, it led to my leader, and we do one-on-ones here, and we sat down and just kind of walked through. Like I was just not, because I had put so much pressure internally on myself and put, and then that manifested in unhealthy boundaries of working extra and putting in a ton of work. There was a more of a, I need this to go well for both my sanity, but also for my image. And then when things weren't going well, it was all came crashing down internally on me. Once again, using intense words, it went well, but it did not feel that way. And so then when we jumped into the next time we did the initiative, there was much more of a pushing to be more collaborative, and it didn't sever the relationships with the people I had done the first initiative with when we did it the second time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, for all three numbers in the assertive stances, three, sevens, and eights, I mean, you just can get going a mile a minute with a lot of self-assurance and independence and sometimes favor autonomy. And it can just feel like whiplash to everyone else, or they can just feel like they got left in the dust, of like, I didn't know we made these seven decisions. Thank you for informing us. Like, where was I when this happened? Or what is my job? I feel like I'm just getting drug along in the ship. But it's helpful though in those moments to realize, even if it's learning from the last time it didn't go well, of taking time to slow down, slowing down enough to check in with people to see how they're suited for things, to get their feedback, to get their critiques of things, to get their questions about what we're missing, right? I mean, there's nine different ways to look at a project outside of, subtypes and all that, right? But even just realizing there's so many different gifts and intricacies that people bring into to collaborative spaces. And so slowing down enough to let those be a part of it too.
And that's, I think, the bringing the fear in from the previous role, because I managed seven people and I walked away from that feeling like I had hurt them. I had kind of like left a pile of bodies behind me in my pursuit of, trying to make something successful that was not set up to be successful. excuse me, I had then come into this position feeling a lot of doubt and still feeling a lot of doubt. Like when my leader talks about me one day being a leader, that's like incredibly terrifying because up until my most recent role, I had been told, you're a leader, you're a leader, you can do it. But then when you kind of start thinking about what does it mean to lead and care for others, and then having that performer achiever mentality, what happened at my last role was I was seeing the people that I was leading as a means to an end. And then it went from I was seeing to I needed them to contribute to help me achieve this larger goal of we got to get to this point by this month and get to this point because this will then lead to my wife and I not living on campus anymore and getting this budget and moving to this direction. And all these things were kind of hinging on people that I was that were put into my care to help support and care for, but I was only viewing them as a means to an end. And so walking out of that has been really terrifying to think, how can I view the people I work with as not that, as you know, protecting the integrity of who they are as people and as humans, but also as employees of, yes, they have jobs, yes, they're producers, yes, they're contributors, but they're not so much so that you are, they're only viewed as that. And they're worth to you as a three is based upon what they bring or don't bring.
You're listening to Enneagram Coaching with Abby Rodriguez. And this coaching session will resume in just a few moments. Are you interested in coaching but need a more cost-effective option to participate? I hope you'll join the next group coaching cohort that begins at the end of January. Group coaching provides participants with the opportunity to delve deeper into the Enneagram and also to have personal support from me as an accredited Enneagram coach and certified somatic experiencing practitioner. Each group coaching is limited to 5 participants so that you not only have space to learn from the teaching moments, but to also process your experience and receive coaching in a safe and supportive environment. This group coaching cohort that's beginning at the end of January is specifically designated for women this time around. This group coaching will begin January 26th and meet weekly on Wednesday evenings at 6:30 or 7:30 if you're on the Eastern time zone. It'll meet over Zoom throughout the course of 2 months for 8 total sessions. Each session will include an opening mindfulness practice, Enneagram teaching moments, personal sharing, as well as coaches' responses throughout. The registration is only $320 for the 8 group coaching sessions, which is a fraction of the cost for individual coaching that I offer. Each group, again, is limited to 5 participants, so make sure that you reserve your spot and register today. Okay, friends, back to the coaching session. As you talk through that experience, both the reflection of, you know, now, but also before, and what that really, the baggage, right, that that brought into this new work environment, as I was listening to you, I mean, I felt almost anxious, right? Almost a sense of like, there's this hustle and I have to keep going because there's this dragon chasing me and I got to keep everyone else with me so that they don't get eaten either. And then if something happens, everyone, you know, everyone perishes, right? But there's a lot in that. And I'm just curious what you sense as you talk through that, just checking in for a moment. What's there for you?
It's why I'm going to go to counseling this year. Like that's, but I've been avoiding to, I'm going to answer your question, but I've been avoiding this feeling, this baggage for a year. And I need to forgive myself, I think is the big thing. That's the emotion is the really, when you get to the deep of it, is I failed. Mm-hmm. That's what I have walked away from that experience because I walked into it. It's my alma mater. I'm working at the place that developed me and shaped me, and I had a plan, an image of what success looked like. And then when it didn't happen, and not all because of me, there were a number of reasons why it didn't come together, I walked away just basically battle wounded and wounding others in the wake of it. And so that has translated into kind of unhealthy 3 terms of I failed. Mm-hmm. Even though there were things that were not failures, there were things that worked, I have put that experience in a box of failure. And so when I came here and I was interviewing for the job I have now, was like trying to prove to people that I could do it. And it was also trying to prove to myself that I could do it because of like, I'm pivoting a career that I put so much identity in. And so, there's, I think like, it's good that you're kind of pausing because it's important to acknowledge that there's weight there, there's heaviness, because I view those seven people as I hurt them.
Yeah.
And I hurt them for a just cause that was then manipulated into a dangerous game.
You said there's a weight there, there's a heaviness. I'm curious if you can physically feel that in your sense. You know, we talk about in like somatic experiencing that our emotions show up physically, right? When we're nervous, there's knots in our stomach, or sometimes we like have this jittery feeling if we're excited. But the same thing happens with heaviness, right? Sometimes we can just feel that it's a heaviness on our chest, or it feels like a weight on our shoulder. And so if you take a moment just to take a deep breath and just sense into your physical felt sense, can you feel that heaviness show up there? Hey, Enneagram friends. We'll be right back after this short message.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
Yes and no. I think it's because it's been a little bit of time since I've really dove this deep into it. And being here, it's not as heavy. Kylie and I were back in Asheville a couple months ago, and the whole time I was there, it was present. Like the heaviness was present, because we were back in a place I have so many emotions and so many good memories from, but also a guilt. And I don't know, I don't even think I've told her this, but I think probably a hidden reason why I didn't really want to see anyone from work and reconnect was just kind of shame. Honestly, and physically it manifested itself while I was there, of like I started losing my hair. Like I think there's a real, my dad's lost his hair. I think there's a radical component to that, but like I could see it physically impacting my body. And being here, I've definitely, now that I'm out of that space and I have a more like, you know, going from a residence life space to a more 9-to-5 space, and even living in a normal environment, those things have all contributed to a different health component. But I think like the shame of that time is definitely something that needs to be addressed. And that's why it's on the docket. I need to go to counseling. I want to go to counseling because I want to work through that, because I don't think I can move forward with helping and caring for others. And whether it's leading in a work setting or not a vocational setting, I don't think I can move forward with that without addressing this.
Yeah. When you say that shame, what does that feel like? It's okay if you don't have language for it, but can you feel it in your felt sense, that emotion as it comes up? Sometimes people just, the description is like, it just feels bad, or I feel like I can't feel comfortable in my skin, or sometimes there's a temperature change to it. But just taking a moment, even just taking a moment to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth, just to calm your system down, to slow down enough to just be with that emotion, not cognitively thinking about it and analyzing it and how to fix or do something about it, but just allowing it to be there for a moment, because shame is a normal emotion. I'm curious what you sense, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think to use kind of more of the three language, I wake up and I'm trying to exude confidence, right? I'm trying to approaches it like I'm rarely embarrassed, I'm rarely caught off guard, because I've got that plan. And I think really when you boil down shame, the two biggest things, and this I think even relates back to my childhood and my relationship with my parents, of kind of the three words really, actually, I probably would say is disappointment, guilt, and embarrassment. Because it's as a three, and I think this is where when I'm in a healthier state, I can handle those three emotions and not, they won't wreck me. They won't, the boat won't tip. There will be waves and there'll be struggles, but it won't completely ruin me. And when I think about that time and those words, and then as it relates to leading others, it feels like jumping into that space is I would be disappointing people. And I would be embarrassing myself, because that is such a key factor of like presenting. Like every day I'm thinking through that lens of what do I want to present, right? Like, I mean, even like yesterday I lost a bet with a coworker jokingly, and today last night I had to shave my beard, and now I have this ridiculous mustache. And so today I wake up, I know your listeners can't see it, it's good for them, but like I woke up today with a completely different game plan of how I was going to present myself. And so when you like magnify that, or you know, make that, you know, draw that out over a period of time of failure, embarrassment, disappointment, and you keep working that cycle, it has led to like what I experienced today, which is habits that are not healthy. Now my habits are unhealthy, but they're in a healthy space. And so it's kind of now it's like trying to figure out how much longer should I keep living in this space before it hurts me here and I hurt others here. And that's the, I think, fear that comes into play of hurting people, which is, you know, a lot of my motivations and, you know, approaches to things are easily motivated by fear. And when I'm less healthy, that fear is a larger mechanism that's wielding decisions and impacting things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, even, I mean, just giving some three language to it, right? That fear of incompetence or of not being worthy or worthwhile, yours is very tied to people, right? For some people it's not, for some threes it's not as much, but for you it's this fear of that, and it's tied to hurting people along the way. So yeah, that's helpful to have some language for it too. So you've named a need that you have in this next season, which is counseling, right? Having some space to, as you've identified this piece in your life, to unpack it and to sort through it and to seek healing in that. What else might you, as in this conversation, as we kind of transition out of it into back into your everyday life, right? What is it that you might need? What is it that you might need with regards to having this awareness of shame, this feeling of that, this awareness around failure and wanting to overcompensate for that, this awareness around image, whatever you want to pick out. But what comes to mind is something that you might need as you exit out of this space.
Yeah, it's possible that I could be translating the word need in two different directions. One is, what could I like need in terms of clarity? And then what could I need in terms of just better habits and balances? Mm-hmm. I think there's like, and I don't know if that makes sense, but the clarity side is thinking through at age 30, is this my life as a three? Mm-hmm. Because at this point I've worked for almost 8 or 9 years in the working world, and some things have changed, some things have transitioned, some things have just been like, well, that's not as important anymore. What's important is my relationship with God, with my wife, and some of those things have become more clear as you just get older. But the thing that continues to be the same is my work ethic and my drive is not dropped off, and the motivations have been pretty similar, which is provide for my family, achieve and obtain. And so it's like, I think the need there is like, is this my life moving forward as a three? And then kind of shifting to the other need is, if yes to that question, and that's a question for you, but that's a question for me, it's like a larger question, then shifting that into the next need, which is, if yes, then what are the things that I need to be healthy that I have to start choosing over my need for a quick hit of like I'm being perceived as responsive with my client. I responded again, or a quick hit of I did this thing for someone because it was going to help them see me as someone who wants to help them by making a meal or having them over for dinner, right? Like, what are the things that I need to kind of reprioritize from a habit and living standpoint to kind of recenter? And I know some of the answers to them. I just, and some of them I don't. And I just, the hard thing is to commit to it when I'm almost like, in some ways it might be harsh, but addicted to that rush of continually pushing and pushing.
Well, and I think, I mean, again, the language that you're using is really helpful of like a hit of this or addicted to that rush, because there's nine different versions of that. For each of the nine types, they might not use as strong as language of language, but it's still there. And it's these ways that we've managed to get our needs met, and then we become addicted to overcompensating that way. And you know, the first piece of needing clarity around, there's probably lots of tangents that come off of that question that you might have different answers to. But in general, that core piece of it is kind of around like, am I always going to be a three? And the answer is yes, right? And again, there's going to be pieces of that of like, maybe I won't always care about this part. Maybe this part will fade a little bit. Maybe this will adjust. But at the end of the day, this will always be a core motivator for you. And that is not bad, because there's an incredible gifts that come with that type, when it is in balance, when it is not the driving factor that is overcompensating, and you use the other pieces to come in with it, right? It's not just this doing intelligence. There's also this element of emotional intelligence and being, right? It can't just be doing all the time. It's using it appropriately and balance. And as you make peace with your threeness, sometimes, you know, we as we begin to uncover these aspects of our types, we feel embarrassed, we feel frustrated, we feel shame about our type, and there's probably nine different versions of that too. But the reality is there's a tremendous gifts in that too. And so learning to see the goodness of it, because we're pursuing it in balance. We're pursuing it in the most whole version of it. And being kind to ourselves in these moments when we see that we were just trying to get the compliment, or we were just trying to get the accolade, or just whatever, rather than heaping shame on ourselves for noticing our threeness, instead being kind of like, yep, there it showed up. There's my threeness. It happened. And I'm going to move on, right? Because when we heap shame on it, then we just reinforce our type structure, and it almost calcifies it. And then it just keeps going and doing, trying to improve and be better so that that it can outrun the shame. And it can't. It doesn't work that way. You can't use your type to fix your type. Instead, offering kindness in that. And the more that you can offer yourself some kindness as you notice these three moments, the more clarity I think that you'll begin to have around what you actually value, because you will stop spending so much energy trying to fix your three attributes, and instead making peace with, yeah, that was unhelpful. I noticed it. It ran a little bit farther than I wanted it to. I gave it a little bit more, you know, time and energy than I should have, and that's okay. I'm going to be kind to myself. I noticed it. What would I maybe try to do next time? Not critically trying to what would I do next time, but of like, okay, you know, this time I'm not going to spend that much time on it. I am going to leave at 5. I am going to put this on my schedule. I'm not going to let this interfere, right? But being kind, it's tremendous how much of our type structure we can begin to loosen through awareness and kindness, this compassion, this self-compassion, when we notice these things. And when we stop spending so much energy trying to fix our three attributes, we can begin to have some more clarity around our values. Because the reality is, you already know those values. You're just hustling so much that they get jumbled and they get confused, because they're kind of all, you know, in the back of the trailer, jumbling around as you're blazing your trail ahead. But when you slow down enough to rest, to pause, to consider, they come into more alignment. It becomes more obvious what you actually care about, and what's an expectation, or what you think you know, someone in as a successful person in your society should do. You have more space for clarity when there's that slowness. So that's a lot of me talking. How does that land in your experience as I talk through that?
Well, it was really interesting. I was writing down, you used to make peace with your threeness, be kind to yourself, forgiving yourself. I wrote down forgiving yourself for leaving at five, which I thought was, it made me wonder, from your perspective, when I was talking about my previous experience and reflecting, did it seem like it was coming through the filter of trying to almost amend my threeness or apologize for my threeness?
Well, my experience of it was that there was a lot of anxiety around your threeness.
Okay.
So, yeah. You have your own language for it, right? But
sure.
my felt sense, because I experience you as you are experiencing me, right? My felt sense was there's a lot of nervousness of, man, there's a lot of hustle. It felt like just the mouse running on the wheel and it feeling like I have to keep going. Otherwise something will catch me, but I'm going nowhere because I'm a mouse on a wheel. Right. And so that was my experience. I don't know how that sounds as I share back my experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's, it kind of goes back to the superhero or the super, whatever, the gift and the curse of the three got me here, but also the three is what has burned bridges and hurt people. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. Cause as I was listening to you describe it, it was all, I loved it. But it was just kind of embarrassing to think about of even before this call, I had like literally 5 minutes before I was still responding to emails, even though in my head, I knew the right thing to do was to reflect and to pause and to think about what I actually was going to talk about. Cause I had thought about it and prepared it, but not like in a way that would have, from a reflection standpoint, been helpful. Cause it was that, as you use the hamster wheel, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have not forgiven myself for leaving at five before. I've not forgiven myself for coming in at eight, because it immediately, I look at the hamster wheel and I go, oh man, if I had done myself a favor and gotten here at 7 or 7:30, this would have not been as difficult. But every day there's the new hamster wheel with all the things to do.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I think you're, to be kind to myself and to make peace with myself is a deep relude. That statement is so rooted in my childhood and my upbringing. Like that mm-hmm. is the, that was so key, because I'm not kind to myself because the expectation at home was that was not how we lived life. Mm-hmm. You had to hit a certain thing as a child before you would be welcomed in. And I love my parents and this is not that conversation, but that has transitioned into fear-based thinking of, you know, almost that motivation. And so, yeah, I, being kind to myself is a daunting statement mm-hmm. that you made, and the emotions, I was trying to pay attention to it. And I was like, ooh, that's not fun hearing
yeah.
that, because then that means that I have to let go. And that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It is scary. And the task can start with small things. It doesn't have to be you arrive tomorrow and you're magically compassionate to yourself, right? It can be really small things. Like every day when I leave, I will in my mind recite the phrase of, I forgive myself for leaving at five and it's okay, right? Having these mantras, and it doesn't, you know, you could write yourself a post-it note or you can just say it in your head. But starting with something small, a moment that you know is consistently hard for you to be compassionate, consistently something that you critique or judge or shame yourself for, starting with those small things, and then you add on something else, and then you add on something else. But starting with something small, otherwise it will feel overwhelming and your threeness will just hustle to try to get past the feeling.
And it's so, the thing that pushed me over the edge with deciding to go to counseling and getting that, I'm gonna need to get that set up, but was my leader saying, David, it seems like when you have too much on your plate, it's overwhelming, and then when you don't have enough, you're complacent and frustrated that you don't have enough to do, like you go and find more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, that is, because I really appreciate my leader, and he's been so patient, and it's been so clear that it's not, there's not a one or the other. And, mm-hmm. and, but I've been expecting like a three to just snap the finger and I will achieve, because yeah. that's how I produce and that's how I complete and that's how I obtain and achieve. And so I think that's the thing that I want to like gear towards as like an action step, as a next step, is thinking through those small things. You know, maybe it's putting my phone down in another room and having an alarm clock so that the first thing I do when I wake up is not look at the emails that came through from the clients, so that I can start thinking about how I can best serve them. And the hamster wheel started at 6 a.m. instead of 8 a.m. type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And having just some practical pieces around that, but don't try to fix everything at once. Just be curious, right? Notice things. And along the way, even before you have a solution of a boundary or an expectation or a guideline, to be compassionate as you notice things and pick one thing to start with. Otherwise, you will become a project that you are trying to achieve, and your threeness is trying to fix your threeness, and that's not going to help you.
So
it'll
meta.
Just be it'll be the self-improvement hamster wheel. That's what it'll turn into, and that's not helpful either.
I think it goes back to, I was reflecting a couple of months ago, and I don't reflect enough, and this was a pivotal reflection because I don't do it enough, but I just kept landing on the word shalom, which it when you translate it, and I know your husband would know all the things behind it, but the way I understood it is when people would say shalom, they're not just saying peace be with you, but they're saying for you so that you may feel complete. And I thought that was so fascinating, because that is, I think, what has been the driving force, is a desire to feel complete. To fill a gap that I cannot actually fill, but I've treated like a task to fill. And so then it's created the hamster wheel. And I think it's really, I just love what you shared of thinking about the element of this cannot be a task like any other task. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the clarity I needed as I think about kind of the next step in this process.
Yeah. I love the, I just feel a lot of spaciousness, like a lot of, like peace, I think, but just this goodness and this wholeness as I hear you share that. So thank you for that gift.
Yeah.
Well,
you've been giving me gifts the whole time. So I'm very, I'm not hungry for dinner right now. This is great. So
yeah. Well, it's so good to be in this space with you. It's never enough time. Like, it just, even if, you know, even an hour, what I do with my like regular coaching clients is still not enough time, but these, especially being shorter, they're never enough time. But thank you so much for being in this space, for being curious, for allowing me to talk about your feelings and emotions with you. I know that's a little bit of a different space than we've ever occupied together as coworkers. But thank you. Thank you. That's a real gift for me to get to share this coaching space and be curious with you. So,
of course, I have so appreciated you for all the years of our friendship, but you know, taking that class, and this is a plug for anyone listening, taking the Enneagram class, I don't remember, it was kind of like an intro guide to Enneagram. You are so great at that, so phenomenal at just, I think what the way I would summarize it was allowing, very much educating, but allowing the education also be a collaborative journey with the people in the class. And this is what, I mean, this is what happened today, is at no point did I feel like it was intimidating or intense. And so I'm just very thankful that you have been so intentional with considering who I am as a person, the dignity of me, but also in that class, just navigating that with people. So if anyone's listening and hasn't done the class, would highly recommend it, because it's such a great tool to view others the way Jesus views them. And so I just appreciate you, Abby.
Hey, Enneagram friend, if you found this episode helpful, would you do me a favor and share it with a friend that might also find it helpful? Inviting others to learn about the Enneagram with you really creates a greater depth of conversation that you can have in your community with the people that you're doing life with and that are supporting you along the way. Thanks for being a part of my Enneagram community by listening to this episode and sharing it with others.